actually a very, you know, complicated topic, because first of all, Varnashram has been destroyed in the age of Kali, right? And if you try to establish Varnashram in this age of Kali, it has to be Daiva Varnashram, Krishna conscious Varnashram. You see, in the early time, everybody was disciplined. In the Vedic time, everybody accepted, you know, whatever the authorities told. But in the age of Kali, close that. But in the age of Kali, you know, people lost all discipline, lost all morality, right?
You say that last time in a friend.
Huh?
You say that last time in a friend, you make this remark about how the Indians are so indisciplined in this
way. Right. So, the only way the Varnashram can be established is by Krishna consciousness. But then again, the problem is that Krishna consciousness devotees of Hare Krishna, or Krishna devotees, they are in Nirguna platform. Devotee means transcending the three modes of material nature. So in one way, you see, you are telling them that you are transcendental to the modes, and then if you try to classify them in the modes of material nature, then it's, you know, contradictory. So that is what is causing the problem, right? Now, I personally think that the one solution is that we try to form the Varnashram community outside of our society, not with the full-time ISKCON devotees, but gradually bring them up. Like, for instance, you know, if we want to establish Varnashram, then, you know, we have to actually start it from the bottom. You see, Kali came and destroyed the Varnashram structure from the top. Kali first attacked the Brahmins, destroyed the Brahmins. Then, when there was no Brahmin, then the Kshatriyas were, you know, in this, Kshatriyas became, you know, unsubmissive. And they became independent. And they started acting whimsically. Then, thus the Kshatriyas started to fight with each other. And then the whole system, you know, collapsed. Because when the Kshatriyas were gone, there was no one to protect the society. So, when the Kshatriyas were not there, the Vaishyas also became, you know, independent. And then in the age of Kali now, everyone became like Sudras or worse than Sudras. So Kali attacked from Brahmins, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas like that. Now if we want to counter the influence of Kali, then we have to start from the other direction. Right? Kali attacked you like this, so you have to attack Kali like this. And the way to do it is by re-establishing the Varnashram concept from the bottom. I was coming to that. Like in India, one thing I can think of, say for instance, in Mayapur, Bengal, there's a lot of unemployment. Right? People are willing to work for a few hundred rupees a month. You ask them to become devotees, they won't become devotees. But if you give them 400 rupees job, then you'll get thousands of people who are willing to join you, right? So maybe one possibility is, I'm saying maybe, I'm not saying that this is the solution. One possibility is that in places like Mayapur, we can set up cottage industries. Cottage industries.
Small scale
industries, hand, you know, working, not machineries, big machines, like hand looms, right? Then, you know, clay, you know, then brasswares, right? You know, these are kind of things that there is a demand in the society. Now, we can hire these people, right, for some salary. We can engage them, right? But they will know that they are a part of ISKCON. Although they are getting some money, they are also connected to ISKCON or the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. They are connected to Krishna Consciousness. But because they are taking salary, they are not, I mean, they are on the Sudra category. Because Sudra takes salary. Vaishyas, Kshatriyas and Brahmins will not take salary. So because they are accepting a job, because they are working for money and salary, they are considered as Sudra. And because they are, you know, working for money, they'll have to accept it. If you want to become a Vaishya or if you want to be a Brahmin, then don't take money. Work freely. And actually you'll get a much higher job, higher position, and all your needs will be taken care of. Right? So now, this is how you can form the Sudra community. Right? Then, if somebody wants to start his own business, they may be entrepreneurs, right? So, when somebody takes up the initiative to produce something, now, see, what is the definition of in business? Business, definition of business is to cater to the demands of the society. In the society, there is some need, and you cater, you supply to the demand, and you make your profit. That is business. Now, if somebody takes up that initiative, and he sees, oh, the society needs this, right? Or there is some demand for this item. So I'll manufacture this, and I'll make my profit. So he is becoming a Vaishya. Now, anybody who takes up the initiative like that will be classified as a Vaishya, right? And even, you know, if some of the workers, those who joined as a Sudra, they will, if they have some plans, then the society will give him the help. Maybe financial help or other help. And, you know, then a Sudra will be promoted to a Vaishya, right? And then, you see, when the Vaishya community is formed, then they will need someone to protect them, right? Someone, you know, it may be from the Vaishya community or somebody from somewhere else may come. And he may say, well, I'll give you protection. You run your business and I will take care of everything. So he will become a Kshatriya, right? And then the Brahmins are, of course, there. ISKCON devotees are actually Brahmins. Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to make Brahmins. Prabhupada didn't want ISKCON to make Sudras. So if you want to, you know, like devotees, those who have joined the movement, if you want to classify them as Sudra, I personally don't think it's right. Because he has voluntarily come and accepted Krishna consciousness. Of course, in Krishna consciousness there is no difference. A devotee is beyond all these varnas and ashrams. Right? So a devotee will do any job. Devotee will do the job of a Sudra. He'll clean, if necessary, he'll clean the toilets. Right? At the same time, if the devotee needs, he will manage. Take up the job of a Kshatriya. He may even run a business. Job of a Vaishya. And if necessary, or he is expert in worshipping the deity, preaching Krishna consciousness. So that's the job of a Brahmin. So I think, especially in India at least, we should give it a try to form the Varnashram around our society. Like if we want to develop the Mayapur city, I think that's how we have to do it. You know, if you want to invite people, come and join ISKCON, become a full-time devotee, you won't get very high-quality people. We are not getting very high-class people. And then we cannot also train them up very nicely. We cannot also train them up very nicely. And so the thing is, you know, but if we can, you know, hire people, right, then, you know, we'll get many people. Like I, actually when I was running BBT, I hired people, you know, like they have master's degree and, you know, I was paying them only $600-700 a month. You know, $50 a month. But if I wanted to have a devotee, actually I tried to get devotees, but I could not. You know, like good devotees, educated devotees that we have, you know, we engage them in making life members. Right? So they are more effective in making members. They're bringing thousands of rupees. So why would you spare them for BBT? So I found a solution, you know. Fine, hire people. Now if you want to train up a carpenter, train a devotee to become a carpenter, and then if you want to manufacture tables and chairs, it'll take years to get. But you know, you can hire a carpenter for 600-700 rupees. And let him work, and he also be, let him be also part of the community, but as a sudra. Not that, you know, you hate the sudra, right? You are a sudra. Don't curse him like that. On the other hand, you take care of him. He can't act independently. He needs money. He needs protection. So you give it to him. Fine, here is your money. You be happy and serve Krishna.
Generally, the problem we discussed particularly is how to maintain the society. For this reason, many devotees are engaged.
Fine. Like, if we were acting like Brahmins, there wouldn't have been any problem. You see, if we were preachers, Brahmin, what is the occupation of a Brahmin? He is a preacher, right? He goes out and gives Krishna consciousness. Like, Brahmins, qualification, there are six aspects of Brahmins' activities, six activities that Brahmins indulge in. Pathan, Pathan, Jajan, Jajan, Dan, Pratigraha. Pathan, Pathan, he reads the scriptures and he teaches the message of the scriptures. And Jajan, Jajan, he worships the Lord and he helps others worship the Lord. And Dan, he offers in sacrifice, he offers in charity. Whatever Brahman has in excess, he gives it out. A Brahman may have gone out to beg, right? He went out to beg and he got 2 kilos of rice. But for his family, he needs 1 kilo. So other 1 kilo, he gives it out to somebody else. So although he is poor, but still he gives in charity. Dan and pratigraha, he accepts. Now, one of the most important qualifications of a Brahmin is that he preaches. Now, if we maintain that, you know, job, that service, if we preached, instead of, you know, like trying to make money, if we just preached, then people would have supported us. They would have seen, you know, like, well, these people actually are good people. They are very high-class, you know, Brahmins. So we must give them support. Like, there are so many people, you know, in India at least. And also outside of India, there are so many Indians. Those are quite rich. You know, if we behaved like Brahmins, then they would have come forward and helped us. But instead of that, what we did, we started our business, right? Business of, you know, he says selling book is not a business. Selling books, although Prabhupada says it's the best business, but it's actually preaching. You're selling books, but actually what you're giving him, you're giving Krishna consciousness. But selling painting is not the same thing. Selling stickers is not the same thing. So we became actually Vaishyas. And that's why, you see, like, no one, you know, no one wants to help us. They think, oh well, they have a lot of money. Why should I give them our money? So, and also Prabhupada, what did Prabhupada say? So often Prabhupada told us, don't worry about money. So just preach Krishna consciousness and depend on Krishna. Krishna will provide you with everything. But that needs faith. That needs a lot of faith. And we somehow we didn't have that faith, and that's why we are in trouble today.
So you think the Brahmana will be maintained by the society?
Yeah.
And who will maintain the society?
Who will maintain the society? It's actually, you see, Brahmins go out and preach, and if the society maintains them, right? Here, you know, like if ISKCON is actually a society of Brahmins, If that was the case, then others would have helped. Go to think of it, in 10 years Prabhupada built ISKCON up, set up ISKCON all over the world. And if we followed Prabhupada's footsteps carefully, then probably today, you know, we'd have been recognized by the governments, by United Nations, and actually so many devotees have got the recognition. Like, you know, Subhananda? Subhananda, he is a devotee from America. He actually has been hired by the Harvard University, the most prestigious university, and he didn't even complete his graduation. He didn't finish his graduation, but Harvard has appointed him. So, you know, like, there are, I mean, 10 years is a long time. We could have done a lot. Anyway, there is nothing is late. We can still do it. But let us not deviate from Prabhupada's instructions. Let's just stick to Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada wanted us to preach and depend on Krishna. And if we do depend on Krishna, Krishna will provide. Why can't we have this much faith? And how much do we need? If we are Brahmanas, if we really cultivate our Brahmanical qualities, then we don't really need luxurious apartments, you know, very high standard of living. We'd be happy, you know. You know, like, if we behave like Brahmanas, if we develop the Brahmanical qualities, then in one apartment, three families can live. If one apartment has got three rooms, right, then three families can live in those three rooms. You know, our, can go to think of it, you know, like our expenses will come down so much. Now each householder has one apartment and they cost a lot of money. We didn't learn how to become frugal. We have become very, very extravagant in the last few years. So, you know, if you develop Brahmanical qualities, then automatically your life will become simple. Your living standard will become simple, right? And your mentality will be very high. So high simple living and high thinking, that's our principle. Go to think of it in... I'll give you an example, you know, like for instance in Calcutta, our monthly expense is anything between 1,10,000 to 1,50,000. Now, you know, about half of that expense is unnecessary. Bhanu Kumarji. Because if you have, say, if you have a temple of 30, 40 devotees, you consider, you know, 1,000 rupees average per head is more than enough, right? That includes Sunday feast and this and that. So, you know, you can easily bring it down, say, 40,000 for 40 devotees. And, you know, this covers transportation, prasad, clothes and everything. And then, you know, like few things like back to Godhead, giving out back to Godhead, that also is not given. You know, they are not giving now. And plus, you know, Sunday feast. And these people can be, these things can be sponsored. Our feast can be sponsored. You can go to some, you know, wealthy life member and tell him, look, I mean, why don't you sponsor a feast a month? One feast a year. Right? So he won't mind. It costs only about, how much, 3,000 rupees? 3,000-4,000 rupees at the most. And it doesn't affect his skin so much. It is once a year. Right? And people like to feed. And so you need about, you know, 36-40, you know, people to sponsor the feast, and so you have a gorgeous Sunday feast. There are ways of, you know, checking all our financial problems.
ISKCON develops a lot many years because participating all the devotee was Brahmacharya or Brahmacharini. And we saw after they get married, a different mood appear. Yes. What is your vision about that?
If they're Brahminical, then it don't really change so much. Because a Brahmin gets married. You see, Brahmin is not in an enjoying mood. A Brahmin is subdued. His senses are subdued. So he gets married out of responsibility. Right? Well, I have to get married. You know, that's how they think. And they mainly get married to produce children. they don't indulge in, you know, opulent lifestyle. Although, you know, householder life is demanding. But still, you know, if one is Brahminical, then he won't really get involved into this sense enjoyment as such. At least not to that extent. And so the life of a Brahmin householder and the lifestyle of a Brahmachari won't be so much different. Right? Only difference is that householder is two, right? And a Brahmachari is one. Like the Brahmins in early days, what they used to do? They never even used to live in the cities. They used to live away from the city. Usually on the bank of the river, on the bank of a river. They used to clean up the place and plant flowers and fruit trees and cultivate some vegetables, keep some cows, live peacefully. And they would have a gurukul. You know, people would come and live in the ashram of the guru. And Brahmin would teach. So actually, main thing is we have to learn how to become Brahmin. In the West, and also in India. Like actually, whatever is happening in the West is followed by India or other countries. You know, we are not really learning how to become Brahmin. You know, when one gets married, you know, he thinks, now I have to have a house. And they immediately think, you know, I have to have a house like any Western person has his household. Right? Nice big apartment, nice arrangements, right? Nice car, and so many other things. And that's why, I tell you, that's why many people actually lost their faith in us. I'll give an example. One professor from Germany went to England. This professor is very, very favorable. He is the head of the theology department in the University of Frankfurt, in the Goethe University of Frankfurt. Very influential person. And he's a very good friend of our society, Dr. Weber. He went to England and he was staying at Ranchor Prabhu's house. Ranchor is the president. And Ranchor lives very humbly. You know, he has a house which is actually, he got from the social security. Government provides some houses for the people, those who are below certain income group. So Ranchor took that house, rented the house, paying only £10. Cost practically nothing, or maybe £10 a week. And but it's a nice house, clean, you know. And Dr. Weber stayed in that house with his wife and daughter. But at that time, Ranchor's wife got a child. So when Dr. Weber saw that it was causing a lot of inconvenience to the household, he decided to move out. He felt that it's not proper, like, imposing so much. Then he was taken to Hare Krishna Das's house. Right? And he stayed in Hare Krishna Das's house. And Dr. Weber was telling me that the difference was so obvious and so striking. Like Rancho was living so simply. Although he was a temple president, his lifestyle was so simple. And he went to Hare Krishna Das's house and he felt that that house to me looked like a, you know, very rich man's apartment. You know, wall-to-wall carpeting, you know, big 27-inch TV, you know, nice sofas, and in a very, very opulent atmosphere. And not only that, he has two cars, one for himself, one for his wife, whereas Rancho didn't even have a car. You know, he used to walk to the temple every morning from Mangalarati. And, you know, like he was telling me that, you know, like, I can see that in your society you have big problems coming. And that happened, you know, a year and a half ago, before Bhagavan fell. And he just told me that, you know, he predicted that I can see that in your society some people, those who are not very sincerely involved in your society, they are simply sucking your society, taking advantage of your society. Anyway, so that's how it happened, you know, like, and people, our friends, you know, think what's happening actually.
The point now in the Western country, the any temple that it is decreed could maintain even Grihastha, and the Grihastha need to work and to maintain themselves as much. Now, I don't understand how the society could maintain them if practically speaking it is not possible.
Society can maintain them if they were not that expensive. You see, if a householder means, you know, $3,000 a month, right, then it's difficult for the society to maintain. But if the householder costs $300 a month, right, then the society won't mind. Society can. So that's what I was saying, like, if they develop the Brahminical qualities, the Brahmin is satisfied in himself. Brahmin doesn't need satisfaction from outside. Brahmin doesn't derive satisfaction by buying a big car, riding a big car, living in a big house, you know, having all kinds of facilities, material facilities. Brahmin is satisfied inside by his Krishna consciousness. Right? And now you may ask, you know, how can, you know, one maintain a family with $300? Okay. You know, if you rented a house with, say, three-roomed apartment, right, costing you $600, right, and three householders are living in that house, it's, you know, it may not be very opulent, but it's possible, because it's a matter of just living there at night, because a Brahmin will spend all his time in the temple. Prasadam will come to him free. Right, and all the other expenses that are there in the temple will provide. Right, if the Brahmin has to go to some place, then the temple will pay, because, you know, he is doing it for the sake of the society. So, you know, like, we can reduce our expenses, but the thing is that the example should come from the top. You see, if for example, like, if the temple president has a very high standard of living, then he can't tell others that you have a low standard. Right, but if the temple president sets an example, a very simple living, then others will be inspired, and the temple president can force them. That no, you, why should you live in a $500 apartment a month? What's the need of just having an apartment for yourself? Although it's a one-bedroom apartment, but why? Why don't you live in a community? So this is how, you know, like, we have to be strict with ourselves, developing Brahminical quality. And after all, go to think of it, you know, did we come to Krishna consciousness to have, you know, a very high, opulent, very opulent lifestyle? When you came, what was your idea? You came to be a renunciate, right? Like, to take shelter of Krishna. But, you know, because there have been so many bad examples in the past, you know, you drifted away from your, you know, original principle. Right? Now you ended up with a luxury apartment, and along with that came a big burden on your back. Like, you have to maintain it, so the temple won't provide it for you. Temple won't provide it. Right? And so you have to go out and earn it. And in the process of earning such a big amount of money, your spiritual life is affected. You're thinking that, and you can easily consider, there's a big difference between you when you join this thing and you today, who is actually burdened with the responsibility of maintaining, you know, a very high standard of living. Actually, your standard of living is even higher than a middle-class karmi, isn't it? A middle-class karmi pays how much for his maintenance? say, at the most he spends $700. That means, say, 28,000, 30,000 francs. How much do you spend?
I don't think people live with a
I see. How much do you spend? Anyway, I mean, that's the problem, you see. Like, I mean, I was just giving an example. So if we want to, you know, save the society, like, we have to cut down our expenses. That's why, you know, like, last 1 year, practically all over the world, they were thinking how to cut our expenses down, and that's why they decided, let the householders take care of themselves. In a way, actually, the temples are trying to start from scratch now. Consider what you can do with the brahmacharis. That is the basic mood in many temples. And they don't want to take up the shoulder the responsibility of the householders. Right? That's why the mood is, you know, let the householders maintain themselves.
One thing also, for example, in Vedic societies, the king was asking for the people to give Lakshmi, for to give tax. But also, the king was giving protection. But we saw in the past, the whole society was asking a lot, the brahmachari, but many times was not giving protection, even spiritual protection in some case. And it's a little bit for this reason some devotees now at least take care of themselves. How do you see that point?
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, the devotees were used in making money, right? And the leaders did not consider that these people, you know, they came here for spiritual advancement. You know, they were just used as, you know, the instrument to make money. And they did not care for their spiritual lives. And that's why many devotees actually fell down. And many of those leaders also fell down. Right? But if a person is sincere about giving proper guidance to devotees who came to Krishna consciousness, then I think the more emphasis should be there on his spiritual life. Right? Are you chanting 16 rounds? Are you following four regulative principles? If you are a brahmachari, why are you talking to these women unnecessarily? Right? But instead of that, the mood was, you know, you don't need to chant 16 rounds. You're collecting a lot of money. If you bring a lot of money at the end of the day, you don't have to actually chant 16 rounds. Even though they didn't say it, but that was the mood in a way, right? Then they didn't consider that these are brahmacharis and they're going out meeting, you know, in karmic clothes, meeting all these kind of karmic women, those who give very bad vibes, right? How can one maintain his celibacy, you know, speaking to these women, you know, in disguise, you know, practically 8 hours a day, right? 12 hours, sometimes 12 hours a day. And you know, you are a salesman yourself, right? I mean, painting salesman. So that's the problem, you know, like, now I think our mood should change, you know. Like, don't worry about very high opulent lifestyle. How much do we need, actually? We are happy with whatever we get, right? And people will, you know, take care of us. Like, I mean, we are traveling now. And we can keep on traveling like this throughout the year, right? People will pay for our train fare. People will feed us, people will take care of everything, you know. So why should we, you know, unnecessarily worry about, you know, how to maintain a very, you know, opulent lifestyle?
I can understand. Well, I'll explain. Srila Prabhupada came to South Africa in 1975, and when he was there, he said you should build a temple like the Krishna Balaram Mandir here in Durban. So when Jayatirtha, you know, left and Bhagavan came in, at the same time we were a bit under pressure from the government. That's another story, but we were in danger of being thrown out of the country, of the foreign devotees, because they had come illegally and stayed on tourist visas because they wouldn't give us work permits. So in order to get the confidence of the government and also the Indian community like the Hindu Mahasabha, everyone got behind building this temple in Durban. So two-thirds of the funds for that temple came from selling paintings, and one-third came from donations from the Indian community, and it took about 4 years to build. And the temple was built, and it was a big success. 100,000 people came to the opening, with the mayor and many big dignitaries, and even now we have very big festivals. But at the same time, the devotees aren't inclined towards the deity worship, and especially like even... It's still the mood is there of just collecting. And even though most of them aren't doing paintings anymore, but now no one really wants to stay in the temple. They all want to go out and collect. Mainly more like collecting from Indians, which is semi-preaching. But now but at the same time, it seems it's a very nice facility to have the temple, but because of that influence, I know it had a very bad influence on my life, spiritual life, so like, paintings for about 3 years, karmic clothes sitting in, you know, shopping centers, and, you know, most you have to deal a lot with women because they're the ones that take care of the home. But I can't see how, I mean, in the end, at least we have very good support, it's a very good facility, we fulfill Prabhupada's order, but there wouldn't have been, at that point, there wouldn't have been enough support from the Indian community to build it. So I don't know really how to see it.
Well,
and some devotees actually, they fell down. I know Gokulendra, he was a very good devotee. And he got so much involved with this painting business. We even had shops for selling paintings. Involved with one of the women he hired to manage this shop. He divorced his wife. He moved out. He's living with her, and now he started his own separate painting business because of this. So it's like a mixed reaction.
Yeah. See, Prabhupada wanted us to raise funds, right? And about raising funds, Prabhupada gave us two very important policies. One is book distribution, another is life memory. And if we stuck to those two principles, right, we would have been safe. Because you don't fall down by selling books. And when you sell books, you preach, right? And by distributing these books, people would have become very favorable towards us. And if we stuck to it, if we stuck to book distribution, distribution would have increased. Like Prabhupada wanted us to double it, and we did double it, right, for a few years. And we could have doubled it, because more we have sold these books, the more the demand would have increased, because people would have read them, people would have spoken about them, and a time would have come, you know, when everybody would have been raving about our books. But, you know, we dropped it. We dropped the idea of selling books, right? We took up a very easy way of doing it. By selling paintings. It's easy, because people like to have paintings, and you can have a tremendous profit on them. So easy money came, but through that easy money came Maya. You know. And same with the life membership, you know. If we stuck to our life membership program, that's preaching. We didn't have to lie to them. But we simply had to cultivate these people. Right? As we were saying the other day, you know, Shyamlal, he has 100 people. You know, he made 100 life members and he just, you know, he's simply cultivating them. And you know, he is getting unlimited fund from these 100 members. So if we trained up people, you know, to make life members and cultivate them, not just bluff them and forget them after they paid the check, then, you know, like, our society would have been in a much stronger ground than it is today. And yes, temple we need to build temples, no doubt about that, right? But these temples would come, you know.
Well, at this point it had to be done at that time to show the government we were doing something substantial in their eyes. And also it had an effect of unifying all the devotees.
Anyway, there's nothing wrong with build the temple. Now, how we earn the money, at that time, that was the feasible way of making it. So we did it. But my point is, let's not make this a policy.
Right.
And instead, let us try to cultivate people.
Well, I think the mood's changed there. But I'm just, in retrospect, I can't see how we could have gotten the funds to build it. You know, when you're doing, we had to do the construction then. No, and
that's possible. There's no harm, you know, for the time being, for the sake of some, sake of accomplishing some mission, we can do it. But also at the same time, we must remember that this kind of projects, you know, will demand a lot of sacrifice as well, right? The ones, those who are going out to collect like that, I think 50% of them will be in Maya, will fall down. Like, I'll give an example. One of Ramanujacharya's associates, building Sri Rangam, right? He had, you know, 4 thieves collecting money for him. And they actually had some mystic powers. One could become very small, one could open any door, one could walk in water, and one could... Hypnotize people, Right, that's right. So this is how, so he got this group of 4 to collect the money, and what they were doing, they were stealing money for renovating Ranganathji's temple. But after the thing was completed, he drowned them. Took them in the middle of the river. Yeah. Just turned the boat upside down. And so the thing is, you see, like, temple was built, but these people had to be sacrificed. The same way, you see, like, we are building temples. I mean, if necessary, we may build temples like that. But these people, you know, if we... Right, Guru Kripa.
They got very loose.
That's why it's better, you know, like, Prabhupada built temples in India, but Prabhupada did not really want to get involved into any of these unfair means, take any of the unfair means for collection. Prabhupada stuck to his own policy, book distribution, and BBT money would build the temples, right? So Prabhupada had a very sound principle, but we deviated from the principle in due course of time. Prabhupada didn't know how Guru Kripa was collecting money, but Prabhupada had his anxiety. One day at 2 o'clock, Prabhupada was asking Bhaktisar Damodar Maharaj, and I was there. Prabhupada was asking, how is Guru Kripa making his money? Is he making his money in a proper way, or is he using some unfair means? And Prabhupada was expressing his anxiety, you know, extreme anxiety. And his anxiety was not, you know, anything else but the reputation of ISKCON. Prabhupada said, if we use unfair means, then ISKCON's name will be implicated with that. And Prabhupada had the experience with the drug dealer in West Coast, Rishabh Dev, and what's his name? Anyway, So some drug dealers were giving money to Prabhupada, and they got arrested. And they found, you know, these people had donated money to ISKCON, and ISKCON's name got involved with the drug dealers.
Well, when we were selling paintings, it wasn't really illegal.
No, it's not illegal. Illegal to that. No, it's not illegal
not
in
externally,
that.
Externally, and they didn't even know it was us, so they didn't connect us with them.
Well,
so
but the thing is,
view,
I'm not talking about that. That's what I'm talking about. Give the tiger a taste of blood, right? You know, it's very difficult, you know, to remain fixed up in Krishna consciousness. I mean, when a devotee comes, why don't we let him go home first? Because we know that if he goes home, he'll be in Maya, right? And he will not come back. Why don't we let a devotee sit alone when he joins? Why don't we let the new devotee sit down alone? Because if we let him sit down alone and brood over, he will think of Maya. Maya will get him and he will run away. So we take care that devotees don't fall in the clutches of Maya. And here we are voluntarily sending them into Maya. Go out, make money. Then they get the taste. And then, you know, some problem, the devotee has some problem with the temple president or the guru or somebody. Then he thinks, why should I give all my money to them? And he got the taste of, you know, making money. So, he got the taste of making money. So, you know, it doesn't take him very long to find a woman. And then, you know, he is making money. Like the other day I saw in England, you know, one devotee riding a brand new BMW. And his long hair, he was dressed like a karmi and everything. But we were walking down, Ajamil Prabhu and myself were walking down the road, and this boy waved. And then I remembered that I actually saw him in the temple. So I asked, who is he? And he said, he's a devotee. I asked him, does he live in the temple? He said, no. Then I asked him, what does he do? And he said, well, he sells painting. And, you know, in England, you know, BMW is a very prestigious car, you know. It costs a lot more in England than in Germany. And here is he's actually a brahmachari. Right? But you can well imagine how much of a brahmachari he is now. You know, right. Riding a fancy car, you know. And because he is making money out of selling paintings, temple can't have any control over him. You know, probably he's keeping all the money for himself. Who is going to check how much he is making and how much he is keeping? Is it good for his spiritual life? Obviously not. So then better not get into those kind of business. Better not spoil this devotee's spiritual lives.
There's a lot of, if you're selling paintings, there's a lot of opportunity to get money.
Yeah.
You can, I mean, everyone doesn't ask for a receipt. Temple isn't very strict with their inventory.
And temple is grateful to you that you're bringing so much money.
Right.
Temple is actually afraid to tell you anything. Because temple knows, the temple authorities know, that if they put too much pressure on you, then you may split any day. And there goes one collector. So actually, you know, spiritually, it is, you know, corroding our society. And this is how Kali entered into our society. Kali entered into our society in the form of this painting and stickers.
Too much business, what else do we have to say? Like you explained, there's rules in business in our society. But on the other hand, we see this is only books, we're losing, actually we are not doing any profit on the books. How to balance this two extreme position? It's not extreme to distribute books, but we see we can maintain through.
Well, that is the case only in some countries, like in Belgium, right? I think only in Belgium, that's the thing, because you don't, maybe France, because you don't sell so many books, and if you have to pay tax, you know, it goes up very high, and so on and so forth. Now, if we are depending on book distribution, then probably we wouldn't have made such a big, huge setup in Belgium. But because we are depending on painting, and from paintings, you know, we are making a lot of money. which is, well, we can buy a castle in Belgium. We have a lot of money. But we didn't consider that this money is not really Krishna conscious. You know, if we are sticking to book distribution, then probably we would have had a small center in Brussels or Antwerp. And, you know, there were book distributors would have been staying there, going out, you know, distributing books, and that would have been all.
So the real problem was the leader was not enough Krishna conscious.
The problem actually begins when the leaders are not Krishna conscious. You see, one good leader, one pure devotee like Prabhupada, can set up hundreds of temples all over the world. But if, you know, the ones, those who are following him, do not follow properly, then they can destroy everything. And whoever follows, you know, they are flourishing. Like, I'll give a lot of credit to Harikesh Maharaj. He stuck to Prabhupada's principles. Right? Books printing, book distribution, although he's doing some paintings. But that is, you know, like some, but still he is very careful. He doesn't want all the devotees to do paintings. He has only a handful of devotees doing paintings, and they, you know, subsidize book printings. And also not in Germany, many of them are actually doing it to subsidize the preaching in the communist countries, where they can't really make the money.
Many of our leaders was establishing Krishna consciousness in such gorgeous wood with castle, because they said, Prabhupada said, we need to seek big ISKCON. What do you think?
Big ISKCON doesn't mean, you know, big chateaus, big castles, right? Prabhupada was pleased when he got something for Krishna, right? But when Prabhupada said big ISKCON, that meant a big congregation of devotees all over the world.
And also thinking international.
International, right. I mean, one huge Krishna conscious society. That's what Prabhupada wanted. And many, many thousands of devotees. But what we did, we got big buildings and drove out the devotees. What's the use of the body without the soul? Does it have any value? These buildings are actually for the devotees. But if you drive out the devotees and have these big, big buildings, then you end up just using them as an object of your sense gratification. And pretty soon you begin to think that you are a king, and this is your kingdom, this is your palace, and these are all your, you know, subordinates, subjects.
Practically speaking, your vision is to become some more natural extension of Krishna consciousness,
right.
The force will be the Brahmacharya ashram, tapasya, renunciation. How do you see this, the Grihastha ashram?
Yeah, Grihasthas also accept renunciation. It's not only that the Brahmacharis and Sannyasis, you see, are in Krishna conscious, the foundation of Krishna conscious is renunciation. What is the use of unnecessary things? You renounced your bad habits. You renounced your sinful life. Yeah? So, reject what is unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. Is it favorable to live in a big house where you have to, just to maintain, you have to work for 18 hours a day? No, you begin to think, I mean, why am I doing it? Did I come here to just work like an ass to maintain my family? I might as well become a karmi then. Karmis are doing that, right? So then you begin to think, you know, why am I doing it? What is actually my goal? And so you want to, you know, cut down your expenses, make a simple living. But you can't do it because nobody else is doing it. You begin to think, oh, I have to maintain my status quo. Right? Everybody else has an apartment that is costing $1,000. Right? Everybody else has a car. Everybody else has a color TV. Everybody else has a wife. So let me also get all these things. And that's how, you know, one gets entangled in the household life. But there is nothing wrong with the household life. But the thing is that the devotee's household should be Krishna conscious. Should be Krishna conscious household. Husband and wife both should be working in the temple. Right? And, you know, if you are productive, then, you know, temple will pay. You see, what is actually wealth? Do you know the definition of wealth?
To be Krishna conscious?
No, I mean, so I'm so talking, when you talk about money, wealth, what actually is that wealth, according to economics? No, the thing is that the definition of wealth is the utilization of manpower towards productivity. Right? Every man has some productivity. No, I'm sorry. Utilizing the human productivity to meet the demand of the society. That is what wealth is. You see, you have some ability to do something. And in the society, there is a need. Now, you utilize your productivity to meet the demand of the society. And that becomes wealth. Right? Say, for instance, you know, you are a gardener. And I need to make a nice garden. Now, I do not know how to do the gardening. But I have money. And you are a gardener. You come and tell me that, look, you have some patch of land. I think you can make a nice garden here. And then you say, actually, but you have to pay me so much. So I say, yeah, go ahead. I'll pay you. Right? So here is, you see, like your productivity has been utilized to cater to the demand. And that has become the wealth. That has produced wealth. And modern economics, modern society, the whole thing has been totally corrupted. You know, the economic structure has become completely screwed up because there is an artificial, you know, productivity, and in order to cope up with that productivity, there is an artificial demand. Because you see, like they are making, you know, big efficient machines, and those machines are actually producing a lot, right? So that's why. You know, they have to, and they have hired a lot of people to produce, right? And they are paying them a lot of money. And a lot of production is going on. But the demand, you know, if the demand does not increase, then the production will not have any utility, right? So what they're doing, they're creating an artificial demand through the media, through the publicity. You have to have a color TV or your life is useless. You must change a car every year. You must have, you know, this furniture and so on. You must have new dresses and so on and so forth. So this is how, you know, like artificial demand has been made to cope up with the need of the society. Or cope up with the production. And you know, that is actually ruining everything. You know, the Sudras are getting a lot of money in their hand and they do not know how to utilize that money, how to spend that money. Now, are we going to line up with that kind of economic structure? No, we should not. So the thing is, you know, like instead of that, we can make a counter economic structure. That is, produce whatever you need, right? And then, you know, that will automatically have a very healthy economy. Now, everybody has some productivity. Say, in the temple, you know, a person who is cleaning the pot is productive. A person who is cooking is productive. A person who is cleaning the temple is productive. And actually, in the temple, we need people to do these things. We need people to clean the pots. We need people to cook the prasad. We need people to clean the temple. We need people to do the farming. We need people to worship the deity. We need people to preach. We need people to distribute books, right? So this is what we need, and that's why we have made, you know, we have been preaching to make devotees. But we didn't actually go out to make devotees so that they'll go out and color, sell paintings and bring in a lot of money. What do we need the money for? If our work is done, then what do we need the money for? Like if everybody is working and whatever we need, that we can collect from preaching. If you go and tell somebody, give me $5,000, he will hesitate to give it to you. But if you go and tell that same person that, look, I need money to feed the people in the temple, so can you give us some help? We don't need money, you just give us the ingredients. Right? The man will very happily give it. Because he knows that you are actually doing some good service. So I think this is how we have to solve our problems. Devotees, those who come, engage them in the activities of the temple. Right? And, you know, try not to deal with money as much as we can. Right? And try to get things. Instead of getting the money, get whatever you need. If you need to build a house in the temple, collect bricks, collect cement, collect iron. Right? Instead of, you know, collecting money. Because money, you know, remember, Kali is actually taken shelter of money. Kali resides in money. So we should be very careful how we utilize money. In India, I have that experience. You know, people are very willing, very much willing to give you the ingredients. Give us some rice. Okay, how much do you want? 5 tons. Although this 5 tons, you know, cost you about 50,000 rupees, the man will give. In Chandigarh, you know, we were having Sunday feast. What we'd do is we'd go to the market and just collect donations in the raw materials, vegetables, and some different weeks, you know, different people would give grains, right, dal, and flour, and ghee, and sugar. Different people would give on different weeks. And we didn't have to worry about anything. Everything came, right? And they also cooked. These life members, you know, the friends, used to cook the Sunday feast. And every Sunday we are feeding 500 people. But we are not spending anything from our pocket.
Maybe there might be this odd thing that we didn't get.
On the other hand, we had access. Like the ghee that came, not the whole tin was used for one feast. It actually, you know, fed us for one whole week. Sugar, you know, and flour. Like, there were excess. And maybe something here and there, some spices or something. And that's not a big thing.
Right. You need to buy some fingers.
Right. And that also you can take donations, you know. Right. If you go to some shop and tell, look, we don't have some jeera. Can you give us some jeera? Fine. You know. People are pious still now, you know, in countries like India. And I'm sure in West also people are pious. But main thing is that they have to have trust in us. You know.
But for the devotee also, they have to live like that, because when you speak like this, I remember when I joined, it was the same mood, but at that time I have a lot of faith. And to live in that way, need faith, and faith is to have faith where to have knowledge. That means the relationship between authorities and devotee had to be based on the very
love and trust.
Love and trust. And this is, if we could reestablish love and trust.
It will happen, you see. Love and trust will generate when you're working together. Mm. Right? We can't develop love and trust if you go out at 8 o'clock in the morning to sell paintings, and I go out at 9 o'clock in the morning to sell stickers. And we come back in the evening, both of us, in a dog tired, and we're completely fried meeting all these kinds of karmis, you know. And then in the morning we just, you know, meet, you know, for half an hour or so in the prasadam table, right? We can't develop love and trust by that.
I understand your point, because I see one month particularly I'm living in Vrindavan, that space where the program has been associated
right,
with right. So many knowledge and so on. And now I'm going back to Belgium and I said, I don't see how now I come again, go at night and no spiritual program and this and that. But I don't see also how can I manage to balance everything like that. Because they have in Belgium, for example, in Vrindavan, only the important is made on the spiritual aspect, practically speaking, because everything is going
on. Yeah, you've collected money in Belgium and then you come here and you're given so much money, you're not under economic pressure.
Yeah, but it's not, for my life, yes, but for the Belgium Yashua, not all the Belgium devotee had to come in Vrindavan and live here.
But he's saying that 1 month that he spent in Vrindavan,
yes.
He can see the change. And he is worried now that when he goes back, what's going to happen? Because he won't be following the same program again. He'll have to go back to the old program, you know, going out, you know, sort of selling paintings and
at night.
Yeah, at night meeting.
They sell the Rajasthani paintings though in Belgium, don't they?
And dry stool and wet stool. That's the difference.
Well, you know, don't they go out and don't teach them?
No.
Yes.
You go out and
Dirty, but I'm selling carpet, for example, and the carpet the people have at home at night. That means we meet people at 8 o'clock. Make a carpet needs at least 3 hours. That means 11, 12, time to come back. The day after, no spiritual program, chanting rounds at 10 o'clock. And,
You go out in Dirty to sell carpets? That's still good. That's quite good. And, well, one thing, of course, you have to understand that when you are in the household life, you know, you have to sacrifice something. Like, you can't have that same life of a brahmachari. And unless you get into fully involved in, unless you get into full-fledged temple activities, like the becoming a pujari or something like that, then it's different.
Because the plan at the beginning is to do some business during 3 days and the other 4 days to be engaged in devotional service. But generally, that can't really happen like that.
It's two levels of different states of consciousness. You get your mind into one wavelength, it's hard to switch over to another one.
Go to think of it, I mean, I can think of a substitute or alternate to that problem, you know, is that instead of selling paintings, you know, say just an example, if you are involved in agriculture, making gardens, you know, fruits, I'm saying, it would have been so satisfying. At least I can imagine myself, you know, doing gardening, you know, taking care of the fruit trees, taking care of the flower trees. You know, then, you know, going out and getting into such heavy business atmosphere, you know. And actually in Belgium, in Radha Desh, the garden is suffering very much.
So we said to Jayagopal, when I will come back, we will be very pleased to take care of the garden.
Who said?
I will say to him, you will be very pleased to take care of the garden.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking, of course now the winter is starting. Next year I think I'll take care of the garden. And I thought of it also. Like, it's not difficult, you know, like get all the devotees into the garden 1 day a week. You know, clean out all the weeds. And you need one expert man, you know, who knows how to do the pruning. Fruit trees, you know, don't really need so much care. You know, you have to just... It needs care, but it needs more expert care.
You can even grow the food in the temple.
I don't know how much food we can grow, but we can grow a lot of vegetables there.
You say food?
Yeah, right. No, I'm saying the grains we can't grow there.
No, but...
Yeah, vegetables and fruits... Vegetables and fruits and flowers you can grow there. We have plenty of land.
Wheat is
cheap.
Yeah.
Wheat is cheap.
Wheat and rice. You could even have some greenhouses for the winter time.
We have two greenhouses. I was also thinking of setting up two more. Between those, you know, rows of fruit trees, we can put two more greenhouses. And four greenhouses will give us sufficient food for the winter. I mean, we have land, you know, we have, all we need is just,
That's what Prabhupada's mind. Maybe it won't be 100% self-sufficient, but you can go in that direction.
Right. It's so satisfying, you know. When you're eating vegetables from your own garden, fruits from your own garden. In New Mayapur, they have 2,500 fruit trees, and they all are producing, you know, first-class peaches, you know, first-class plums. I mean, not often I tasted plums, so sweet. You know, fresh from the garden. You know, 2,500 trees. Can you imagine how much it is? I mean, it can, you know, it can feed the whole community plus you can sell. Yeah.
Or you could even make some kind of preserves.
Yeah, yeah.
And sell it. People
right.
like that type of thing.
Right, oh
natural
yeah.
Natural home you
right.
own.
Right.
And you have some kind of natural label on it.
Right. Right.
You know, it's free from artificial flavoring, colors, preservatives.
Yeah. Who told you that I wanted to get into the gardening? I told you. No, before? Oh, you said that you are going to tell Jai Gopal.
Yes.
Oh, I see. No, I thought that you already told. Because I spoke to one person. Just one person I spoke to. You know who that is? Krishna Sarup. And I was trying to fire him up, you know, to get into the garden. And I told him that, look, I would like to get into the garden. Because it's so satisfying, you know. And I want to get into it because I want to set an example, you know. Like, so many things you can do that devotees will get inspired by. Anyway, I was just curious. Belgium is a beautiful, very beautiful country. I mean, it has a lot of potential.
You heard the people are very nice there.
Yeah.
Because still, they are not engaged in such big self-gratification.
Mm.
The government is controlling no abortion is illegal, no publicity with naked women.
There's no pornography.
No, or no. One time we went in Holland to do some R&M, and immediately we went in this and sex shop. In Belgium, we don't see that.
I remember, that's what's the name of the town near the border, yeah?
Yeah,
I remember.
But I was shocked, you know, and the first time it was everywhere like this. Huh? And France is the same, but Belgium is like protected, huh?
Mm.
And people are simple, they are still very pious, they are very...
Yeah, Belgium is a beautiful country.
Mostly Roman Catholic, I guess.
Yes.
In Western countries, I mean in America, most of our devotees come from Jewish and Roman Catholic backgrounds.
Mm. It's very strange the way I ended up in Belgium. I never had any connection with Belgium before. I went to other countries. I mean, I spent a long time in other countries like Germany. I mean, I used to spend a long time in Germany, Switzerland, Austria, even Italy to some extent. England, of course. Belgium, I didn't have any. I didn't even. I went there only once for one day or 2 days.
But you will know when you arrive. I didn't know even you. Just before I met Arivinas in this, I asked him, I would like to be connected with this reform movement in this camp, with all these devotees, with different ideas and so on. And he said, oh yes, right back to Chavon Maharaj, and he had very nice ideas about it. And some days after, he was in Belgium, what is your name, Maharaj? My teacher was funny. I saw Krishna was doing some arrangement. Because all these devotees are very serious, sincere devotees in Belgium.
Yeah.
Very nice devotees with space, with really devotees.
Mm. Mm.
Maharaj, one thing, you spoke last time and I would like to have more information, because you explained, for example, in Vrindavan, it's a little bit disturbing for sannyasis and brahmachari, for many women in the temple. And you said perhaps it will be good if the women, better to not marry a brahmachari to the brahmacharini, but better if the brahmacharini get a person outside of our society. Could you explain that?
You see, when somebody joins the society and if he is not married, and if after he joins the society, he is told that how important it is to stay away from women, then he would listen, right? Because he actually came, you know, he already got frustrated. You know, he saw that this material life is a complete, you know, waste of time. Right, association with women is simply waste of time and energy, right, plus money. And then, you know, like he comes completely disgusted with that life. And then if you tell him what spiritual life is and how he should approach Krishna with one-pointed dedication, with just, you know, with complete conviction, he should approach Krishna consciousness, then, you know, like he will not be inspired to get married, right? If the atmosphere is like that, that you haven't come here to get married, you have come here to become a devotee. So why unnecessarily get entangled with a woman? So there, you know, like you have all these people, those who join the temple, if they're not married, you're getting a whole group of brahmacharis and sannyasis. Right? And now the question is, what to do with the women? So many women come to our society, what to do with them? Okay, my point is, my answer to that is that these women should be married, because women must get married. Men should not get married, but women must get married. So get them married to the friends of Krishna's. Right? We are cultivating so many Namhat groups we have. We have so many friends, those who are becoming favorable to Krishna consciousness. Right? Many of them are unmarried. So let the brahmacharis get married to them. So there, you see, like this man will get a companion who is a devotee, and she can help him to come close to Krishna consciousness. So this is how, you know, we can develop a householder community around us. Plus, inside we can have a very strong brahmachari and sannyasi community. But, you know, like I tell you, you know, each time I see a brahmachari getting married, I cry inside. You know, here goes a sincere soul. You know, here we are losing another good devotee. Because I tell you, you know, once you get married, I mean, you know it yourself. Once you get married, your spirit is completely subdued.
But this vision did two things. First, the brahmacharini very nicely trained in Krishna consciousness. And the second thing, I don't understand, because in Vedic society and generally in the all society, the woman is supposed to follow his husband. And generally, the husband is training his wife in spiritual life because many. I don't see how the brahmachari will train the husband.
In Kali Yuga, everything is upside down. The husbands don't train. It's the wives who train, you know, the husbands nowadays. So if you have a brahmacharini married to a karmi husband, right, so-called karmi husband, then the chances are that that person will become a devotee.
In regard of what we said, we saw how wonderfully important is this institute, Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. And what do you think to open a similar institute for women, because they need a lot. Many times, brahmacharini or women in general in our society act in an unchaste way because they don't have really education how to act out what kind of relation established with brahmacharini or sannyasi and. Do you think it would be important to do that?
Yeah. Actually, I noticed that some of the women in our society are very intelligent. Very intelligent. And they have a lot of potential. We should not, you know, oppress them. We should let them also, you know.
Actually, Jayadvaita Swami was talking about this.
Not in the same institute, but
he was saying for women, they want to get a husband, and chastity doesn't pay. In other words, if you're chaste, you don't get a husband. They're always in anxiety about getting a husband. So they realize the temple authorities, doesn't really work. So they're always in anxiety. I don't think that the women would want to marry a husband who's from outside. Because generally, they want to...
Not outside. I'm saying friends of Krishna.
Like a congregation member.
These people we're talking about is, you know, following four regulative principles, chanting rounds, right? But they're living outside, you know, then they're going to join the society as a full-time brahmachari or sannyasi. So them, if we start preaching, we'll get a lot of people like that. Those will be sympathetic to our society, those will accept our philosophy. And, like, for instance, you know, like, I know one man, Henry Sholkov, right? He is, you know, a very rich person. A very, very rich person. He is a bachelor, right? And he doesn't do anything. He has so much money. Like, he didn't tell me, but he told somebody. Somebody asked him from Washington Temple that how much he is worth. And his reply was that if I start spending money like a madman, and still I won't be able to finish in one lifetime. That's what his answer was. He actually came to Vrindavan a few days back. And so, you know, he follows the regulative principles. But last time I went to him right after Christmas. And I actually stayed with him. And I was asking him whether he is following properly. And he kind of admitted that during the Christmas time, he broke one or two.